This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, Sharp Money on a Wednesday. You know what that means. Mike Palm, of course, VP, Circa, the D, Golden Gate Casinos. You can hear Mike Palm across VSiN on a multitude of shows, including on Fridays on the Lombardi Line, on Saturdays with Ben Wilson. We say hi to Mike Palm. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good afternoon, Patrick. Good afternoon, Dustin. Welcome back, Amal, from Thanksgiving travels. Hope you had a happy birthday last week as well.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. Any shout-outs from you, big guy?
I didn't know it was Amal's birthday.
He keeps it a pretty well-guarded secret.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out.
Once we get once we're 50 years old, are we really supposed to celebrate?
Did the AARP card come? 50. Did you get the AARP card or what?
No, but you can get it early.
You've already applied?
Why not? You get the discount.
You got a discount everywhere. It's the world's. It's the biggest lobby in the United States.
Hey, you don't want to pass it up. I totally agree with you. I'm close. Okay, so we were going through the. Well, first off, we should talk about Dustin. You just brought it up. Circa Survivor, 80 left there, Palm?
80 entries left. I think it's like 67 or 68 people. 80 entries. I believe there's only now 8 or 9 people with multiple entries. And VSiN's own Paul Howard is one of those individuals. He has 2 entries remaining. This past weekend, he advanced on Sunday with the Titans and the Chiefs. He still had the Chiefs on one of his tickets. He has Philadelphia on both tickets for Christmas. I think there's a path there. And if you're interested in that ticket, reach out directly to at Follow the Money here at VSiN. It's an open discussion from what I'm hearing.
Selling pieces? Are you telling me selling pieces of it?
Yeah.
Get in early, though. It's easier to sell that than kidneys.
Possibly. We got 2 of both.
Jury's still out on the second kidney.
Well, and, what's the strategy? I admittedly have dropped out of talking strategy since I got dropped out of the contest, but what's the strategy for the 80 remaining here, Mike?
Well, you have to draw the path backward, obviously. Most of them have the Chargers available against the Patriots. The Patriots suddenly become an interesting fade, right, Amal? Mm-hmm. I think Carolina and the Patriots, it's a fluid thing during the year. Who are the fade teams? The Giants were, but then the Giants now in consecutive weeks beating the Commanders and then the Patriots have knocked out large percentages of the pool. But I think that becomes an interesting proposition. I mean, this week I think you have several choices. Obviously, nobody really has Dallas left, but the Chargers at Foxborough, just short of a touchdown favorite. You've got the Steelers, who many have left. They haven't used the Steelers yet. They're hosting the Cardinals. They're a 5.5-point favorite. Tampa Bay, who everybody mostly has left, also hosting the Panthers, as the Panthers have been a pretty solid fade. I think that was what got people through this week, zeroing in on not that they loved Will Levis or the Titans, but how bad the Panthers are.
I think, Patrick, when you look at it, I'm with you. I've really not been paying that close attention, but Pittsburgh seems like a play. Coming off a road win, you got Arizona, a team that got blown out at home against the Rams, and then you mentioned Tampa against Carolina. I think most people will look to take a shot against Carolina the rest of the way.
Are you still alive in your survivor
I'm
back
not.
Home?
I lost. I had to take 2 teams this week.
And oh, this is where it goes to double?
Yeah. And I had the New England Patriots.
Yeah.
Ooh.
35-yard field goal gone astray.
Be curious to see who they start at quarterback. And, boys, we do have some news. Mike, a team that you liked early on for good reason in Cleveland because of all that defense, but they continue with the injuries. So here's the latest. A Browns quarterback, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, now concussion protocol. Joe Flacco has been taking snaps as Cleveland's QB1 in practice and could start Monday against the Rams. Of course, the Rams in the mix in the NFC, so this is an interesting one. Cleveland here in Los Angeles, and Los Angeles boys laying 3.5.
Why is Stefanski so down on Walker? Can you explain that to me? I know he turned the ball over. Well, Amal, you're looking at me incredulously.
I am, because I'm like, that's. Well, I thought it was a rhetorical question.
It's not a rhetorical question. He won games for him. If he doesn't get the pass deflected with 2 minutes left in Seattle, they're winning that game, too. He gave them a chance to win every game. They won in a shootout in Indianapolis with him. I always said I disagreed with this move about DTR. Your team's 6-3. This isn't an experiment to see how good DTR could be. You need to get into the playoff.
I think you kind of know what P.J. Walker is, though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But DTR, he gives you a chance.
DTR was good. Before DTR got knocked out, he was. They were coming back in that game. They had figured out the run game. He was making plays. Before he had that concussion in the bloody mouth, they were coming back to win on Sunday.
I think you look at potential upside with DTR. That's the biggest thing. But other than that, I think they're kind of stuck. Here's the other problem, though. If we're being realistic, when you look around the AFC, you see Lamar Jackson, you see Patrick Mahomes, Tua, other people you want to throw into the mix as the wild card situation, Trevor Lawrence, a potential division with Jacksonville. Are you really winning these football games with P.J. Walker or DTR in the postseason?
Probably not, but you have the best defense in football, arguably. Statistically, you do.
I think their defense is deceptive. Their defense is very good at home. On the road, they're not good.
It's an interesting proposition.
I'm going to save the college football playoff for the debate, Palm versus the Prince, because we got plenty of questions pertaining to that. I have a question for the two of you. Where do you think Jim Harbaugh is coaching next year?
Mike, go ahead.
Well, why would you? I mean, they keep speculating the Bears, but why would you want to go to that organization? Do you really believe in Justin Fields? I mean, if Minnesota tries to make a first down at all, Justin Fields, one of the most, games that you should have won via four turnovers, turning the ball over twice himself on Monday night. They blow the game in Detroit when they were 98% to win it midway through the fourth quarter. I don't know that the Bears is an optimal spot for him unless there's something coming down the road from the NCAA that's going to be really serious. I thought the Big Ten with this, pat on the behind, not even a slap on the wrist, pat on the behind with the 3 Saturday suspension was a preemptive move to try to really block the NCAA from doing anything big.
I don't disagree with a lot of what you said. I think you make a lot of great points. But, Patrick, to answer your question, I do think he winds up with the Bears. Yep. Whether you like Fields or not, you're going to have the first pick from Carolina, so you can choose which quarterback you want to go with. You can add another great piece to it offensively if that's the route you want to go with a pick in the top 5 to top 8 potentially there as well. But to me, I think most coaches at the collegiate level, if given the opportunity to coach in the NFL, would take the NFL opportunity for one reason only. You don't have to recruit. I mean, these guys are beholden to 17, 18-year-olds to come there and basically determine the success or failure of their program. And I think Jim Harbaugh going to the NFL, being an NFL guy, having coached there, coming within about 10, 12 yards, I forgot exactly what it was with Kaepernick and company in that game down in New Orleans against the Ravens, of winning a Super Bowl. If he doesn't win this year at Michigan, it's a complete rebuild for the Wolverines next year. They're going to lose about 18 starters from this team. I think it's a real challenge. Ohio State's not going anywhere. And now you're adding in Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA. I'd rather take on Dan Campbell, Kevin O'Connell, and who else we got in that division? Can't even remember. Oh, Matt LaFleur.
Matt LaFleur. The cheerleader,
exactly.
Michael Lombardi calls him, as Patrick well knows.
Yeah, of course. He hates Matt LaFleur. Chicago. You just answered. I feel like you answered the question there, Palm. You don't believe Fields. So you would immediately trade away from Fields, draft one of the quarterbacks. It looks like they're going to have one and maybe 3 or 4 in the forthcoming draft. You get off of Fields, right?
I would. But that's my opinion. I mean, I don't think, from what he tells you, he's a winner. I don't think he takes way too long to get rid of the ball in his 5 and 7 step drops. The thing they have going for him is they have a very good run defense. It's underrated them all. You can't run the ball against the Bears.
I think both teams defensively on Monday night are a lot better than people realize. The Vikings hadn't given up a touchdown in the last 8 games in the first half, where I think it was just 1. And the Bears defensively, with the acquisition of Montez Sweat, have gotten so much better. I think this team could be dangerous. But, Mike, to your point, I get it. You don't believe in Fields. I don't think, Patrick, when I look at Justin Fields, I don't know where you come out on him. I know you said you'd like to keep him, which I agree with. But does he get you in a situation where he can become a top 10 guy? I kind of equate him to Lamar. Not as good of a runner, but I think he's a little bit better passer potentially. That if you play to his dynamics and his strengths, I think, and you build around him, then you become a very dangerous team.
I don't think he's as escapable as Lamar. I don't think he's as good in a design run game as Lamar. He doesn't get rid of the ball as quickly as Lamar.
That part I agree.
You've watched the Ohio State quarterbacks through the years. Where does Fields rank for you?
Well, I mean, there was only, 3 guys to rank?
Well, Schliester. I think you got to consider Schliester.
Well, no, I was taking Schliester's bets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I couldn't do that. But, no, I just, to me, with Justin Fields, the accuracy leaves a lot to be desired, and that's where the problem is.
I think the Bears will move on just because of their current roster construct, and then they'll draft a quarterback, draft a receiver. But I do think somebody's going to get a quarterback in Fields put in the right spot. I agree with all of the analysis from Palm as far as holding onto the ball. I think he can be a productive player, though. I really do. That's my take on Fields. I think he can be very productive. Okay, you guys saw that Petrino returned. I mean, why isn't this is like the funniest story ever? He's now going to run the offense in Arkansas for Bobby Petrino returning after, of course, the disaster with the motorcycle there. You guys find that funny?
Well, based off of what he did as the UNLV offensive coordinator, I'm not sure about that. He was, what, 4 days? He was, I don't know, he totally embarrassed the university. This is for, you know, I don't know if you guys watch Follow the Money this morning. Paulie redressed in his Halloween outfit, which is Bobby Petrino after the accident with the red. He and JVT were on this morning, so he redid it in light of him being rehired as the OC in Fayetteville.
I think frame what Odom did at UNLV, Mike. Like,
look,
that's
I think
where
it's
you live. That's your hometown.
It's more incredible than the Knights winning a Stanley Cup. It's more incredible than the Aces winning two consecutive WNBA titles to me. No one has been able to do anything with this program, and he led them to a Mountain West championship game, which I don't know how this computer ranked teams. I mean, they didn't beat any of the top three teams, but they got there. But the record against the spread, I think he was 8-2 against Division I opponents against the spread. It's absolutely incredible what he did. Now the only question is, where does he end up next year?
Yeah, that's a big thing. But, Patrick, mm-hmm. you look at this team, just quickly looking at it. UNLV had not won 8 games since 2000. Okay? They won 9 games this year. Prior to that, I mean, the highest win total was 7.
This Who's is coaching in 2000?
Oh, God, I can't. It might have been John Robinson. Yeah.
Was it Robinson?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good pull.
Yeah.
That is a good pull. Oh, my gosh. So it's 2000. So 23 years since they had won 8 games?
Yeah, and they won 9 this year.
Unbelievable. Great job. Good point. Where will he be coaching next year is the only question. Palm versus the Prince coming up next here at Sharp Money.
Is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Total Wine Spirits, beer and more, lowest prices for over 30 years. Find what you love, love what you find at Total Wine. Please drink responsibly, must be 21 years or older. Okay, you wait for it. Wednesday's Palm versus the Prince. I'm going to throw a curveball based on what we just talked about. Let's get the clock started. 5 European leagues, English Premier League, Bundesliga, League One in France, Serie A, of course, in Italy, and La Liga in Spain. Rank them, Mike Palm, we'll start with you. You won the coin toss. Rank them in watchability, like having fun watching the leagues.
Well, that's a tough question. We have to start out with the Premier League. That's the best soccer in the world. La Liga's way down. I would say now second is Serie A. Then I would go League One in France, then Bundesliga, then La Liga in Spain. And I would have put Spain second for many years.
In terms of watchability, I will go with Premier League, Bundesliga. I would go with then La Liga, Serie A, and League One in France. I think it's much more defensive. Serie A is much more defensive. Bundesliga, you wind up every Saturday, there's a 4-3 game. I mean, it could be Hoffenheim's, it could be Dortmund, it's 4-3. It's just a much more entertaining game for the average viewer to watch. Mike's point, though, on the Premier League, I would actually put Bundesliga up there higher if you're just a casual fan, but Premier League, as you guys know, is the best soccer in the world.
Okay, but now to Dustin's questions. Dustin can't even grade that one. He doesn't know.
It was a pass. No. Honestly, it's a big opportunity for one of you because you're definitely going to win for Patrick.
Sure. One of them won. You're right. Well, Amal, you're next. Does an undefeated Florida State deserve to be in the college football playoff?
Yes. There's only been 13 teams out of the 36 that have been selected in the college football playoff so far in the 9 years that have been undefeated. So to be a team that gets in now being potentially, say, 14th as Florida State, Michigan 15th, and Georgia 16th, that's an impressive achievement out of 40 teams potentially. So Florida State running the table, even with a backup quarterback, 100% deserves to be in at 14-0 or 13-0.
The backup quarterback should be irrelevant to the conversation. It's about the body of work. If you're a Power 5 team and you go undefeated, you have to be in, unless there's all five went undefeated, and then you have to make a decision. This is an easy year for the committee, in my opinion. Florida State said you could have 4 undefeated Power 5 teams in Michigan, Georgia, Washington, and Florida State, and if Oregon beats Washington, they're the one that gets in.
Okay, Mike Palm, you're next. Who is the best Heisman winner you watched? Not the Heisman winner this year. Heisman winner you watched.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 2010 and Cam Newton. I thought he was the most dominant player in college football I've ever seen, maybe outside of Herschel Walker in 82. Almost 3,000 yards passing that year, 28 touchdowns to 6 interceptions, and how about 1,500 yards rushing and 20 touchdowns? You couldn't stop him from leaning forward for 4 yards.
Patrick, I love that call. Him and I both agreed. We didn't see enough of Barry Sanders. I thought Sanders was an obvious choice. But for me, I'm going to go with Joe Burrow, 2019. LSU goes undefeated, has an incredible year. Just like Cam Newton, wins the Triple Crown. National Championship, first overall pick, and Heisman Trophy. But how about the ridiculous numbers Joe Burrow had? 60 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. And how about in the college football playoff, a record that will never be broken, 7 against Oklahoma and 5 against Clemson to wind up with 12 there, 6 rushing touchdowns. This guy was unbelievable the season he put together.
Isn't that the title game? You bet me 3,000 straight up. You had Clemson, yeah, I had LSU. Exactly. No point spread.
Amal Shah, where will Bill Belichick be coaching next year?
You know, this is a great question. I think it's an interesting one. I think it's going to be the Washington Commanders because I think Belichick will be able to command so much money. Josh Harrison Company will pay that money to be able to attract someone of that cachet and what he's done in the past. And the Commanders, I don't know if there's a team right now in all of professional sports that needs an image overhaul and just an absolute changing of the guard more so than the Washington Commanders.
I agree with Amal Shah here. They have the opportunity because of the new ownership. They need an adult in the room. They've got plenty of high draft picks on those, and especially on that defense. They finally got rid of Del Rio. And I think they have the most room to err because of the new ownership situation. I think he would be seen as a negative hire in some places.
This is a great question from the big guy. Mike, you're up. Iowa's total touchdowns for Saturday are set at 0.5. Are you going over or are you going under?
Well, I'm
going
to go under, and then you can bet yes on a special team or defensive touchdown to hedge that because that's the only way they're going to score. They're not driving the ball down the field. They might block a punt. They might return a punt, something like that. By the way, at DraftKings, they have Iowa's first half and second half total both set at 0.5 point. Slightly. 0.5 point, slight league juice to the over, $1.25 first half, $1.35 second half.
I would take the 0.5 point over because they've got one of the great kickers in college football. They get inside the 35-yard line. You know he's already thinking field goal. But in terms of Iowa, I will take a chance and roll the dice here and go over on the 0.5 touchdown. They have scored in every game a touchdown this year except the game against Penn State where they got shut out. Remember last year they put up 14 points against the Wolverines in that 27-14 loss against Michigan. So I will take Iowa to score in this game a touchdown.
Amal, Denver at +135, yeah, or the Bills at 4-1 to make the postseason?
You got to go Denver here at +135. Denver's got a much more manageable schedule, and most importantly, Denver has a 24-22 win over Buffalo on Monday Night Football, which we all saw, and that's the reason why Denver in a tiebreaker is going to get that head-to-head advantage. When you look at the schedule down the stretch, Buffalo's on a bye. They still got the Kansas City Chiefs, and then they've got that's on the road at Arrowhead, and then they've got the Dallas Cowboys who come calling. When you look at this Denver Broncos team. They've got the Houston Texans coming up this week. That's a direct team that you could potentially knock out of playoff contention with a victory this weekend down in Houston. So I'll go with the Denver Broncos and currently sitting a half game ahead in the loss. Sorry.
I tried to make an argument for the Bills because of the difference in price at +$4, but I agree with them all. They're probably only going to be favored in one, maybe two games. I don't know what you make them against home against the Cowboys. The Cowboys have been great for 6 weeks. Denver has 6 games remaining. All of them winnable. They'll be favored in at least 3. They just and the tiebreaker over the Bills. I'll go with the Broncos there.
Okay, Mike Palm, you're up. What is the perfect thermostat temperature at home?
Well, I assume this is a year-round question because it doesn't distinguish it. So in the summer, I set it at 76, and in the winter at 68. So let's go right in the middle. 72 is your year-round temperature.
That's my number. That was the number I was going to go with. 72. That's what I keep it at in the wintertime. And to me, in the summertime, also keep it around 72, so I'll go with that.
72 in the summer. You must have outrageous NV energy bills here.
You both are psychopaths. My thing is under 70 almost all summer.
Well, we don't make as much money as you. And
Dustin Sweetelson's ego showing up for Palm in the Pen.
Psychos. You want to sweat your own
that cash is at -180, Patrick.
We knew it was coming. Just to let you know, Dustin, I had an opinion as well, but it's not my game.
You committed murder. You're an unhinged human being. You said it at like 80.
I know. If you committed murder, Amal Shah, allegedly. Now, this might be the two of you entering each other. Who at VSiN would you call to help you hide the body?
So my first call probably would have been to Mike Palm. He's probably the closest of anybody I am at VSiN.
But the problem is, I'm concerned with Palm. It'd be like taking out an ad in the New York Times the next day. That's my one concern about telling Mike. Other than that, I'll call Britton Hess.
So you wait, you're saying that he would then let the press know that Amal killed somebody?
No, he would just say there might be a body in Lake Mead.
Okay.
Mike, I'll tell you one thing. I got to give Mike, because Mike's a close friend of mine. He would never throw me under the bus, but he would just be like this. He'd be like, hey, guys, you might want to look over there.
You're both going to jail then. Okay. Mike Palm, you're up. Who's hiding the body with you?
I think there's two criteria here. You have to pick someone that you trust implicitly. But the second criteria is there anything in their past or present lives that the authorities could leverage them with? So the first criteria, I say Amal and Mitch Moss, and then I'm going to roll the dice and say Mitch has fewer skeletons in his closet that he could be compromised with. So Mitch Moss is my choice.
By the way, statute of limitations on fraud has expired a long time ago.
I'm interjecting again here. What? Mitch is so moral. He would never agree to it. He would never help you. He'd be asking another person. So now you're more liable because you have more people knowing you killed someone.
See, I would
last
actually,
question.
I was going to pick somebody I wouldn't like so I can hit him on the head with a shovel when I'm burying the other body.
Okay. Mike, you're up. Okay. And this is the last one for both of you. Yeah. Who would you like to see as the final four in the college football playoff?
Great question.
Well, I'd like to see the best four teams that could win it. But that can't happen because Oregon and Washington both can't get in. I want to see Georgia. I want to see Michigan. Probably I want to see Oregon. And then by process of elimination of what you could get in, I think Texas prevents more of a problem for those other three than Florida State would.
I would like to see Georgia, Michigan, Oregon, and I would like to see Texas in there. However, I'll make the argument Washington couldn't get in. If Texas loses, Bama loses, and Florida State lose, how about Oregon, Washington, Michigan, and Georgia?
Okay, Dustin, they agreed on a lot this week.
Yes.
So I have two for Palm, two for Amal, two wins for Palm, two wins for Amal, and five pushes.
Oh, I only have two pushes.
Oh, boy.
So you got a winner here.
I have a winner.
He has Amal Shaw.
I have 4-3 Amal Shaw.
Yeah. Oh, so that makes it two back-to-back?
He's looking to go Kirby Smart next week.
Wait, no. That means Palm has won two straight and Amal's won two straight.
Yes.
Right?
I don't know, but I got to give Dustin credit. I love the questions he asked. I love the body one. That was a great one. And then, you know, in terms of the college football playoff, very quickly, guys, how about the scenario where we get Washington and Oregon in there potentially? What? Texas, Alabama.
They want to do something nice for a conference that won't exist after the game.
Jared, I'm just saying. Can you imagine the amount of money Washington State and Oregon State can hold ransom against these other schools?
Happy holidays, Mike Palm. We will talk to you soon. That's the legend. Of course, you can hear him on Friday on the Lombardi Line. Drew Butler is next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, the holidays are here. Let Omaha Steaks take the guesswork out of gifting. Go to omahasteaks.com and save 50% off site-wide. Plus, when you use the promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N, at checkout, get an additional $30 off your order. It's a great deal. Send tender, juicy, butcher's cut filet mignons, mouth-watering burgers, gourmet jumbo franks, or even find some easy-to-prepare meals that are ready in a flash. Omaha Steaks, it's a gift from the heart and a gift that will be remembered with every unforgettable bite. Order with complete confidence today, knowing you're ordering the best. Visit omahasteaks.com. Take advantage, 50% off site-wide. Plus, remember, VSIN at checkout. Get an additional $30 off. Minimum order may be required. We're back. Of course, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, live downtown. My name's Patrick Maher. We're going to bring in a guy. I remember last time we had Drew Butler on, I was like, out of all the guests we've had in 9 months on this show, just the way he approached betting, I'm like, this dude is like the rest of us. He is a degen in a good way. Drew Butler, former Georgia, and in a great way. NFL punter, it's all legal. 92.9 The Game. Host at Drew Butler on Twitter. I hate to start with something so basic, but we've been obsessing over Mike Tomlin all week. Okay, so please humor us for a second. I know you spent a season there in Pittsburgh. I said, like, if I had somebody that I wanted to give a speech at my wedding or help me with my accounting or coach my football team, I feel like the guy can do anything. Can you give us an idea or a look into Tomlin's personality?
Yeah, I was very fortunate. My rookie season was in Pittsburgh with Coach Tomlin, and then spent about another 8 months there leading into the 2013 season. And then I went to Arizona with a ton of Pittsburgh coaches. Kind of that migration happened, so a lot of the same Tomlinisms. But I think the number one thing I was most grateful for in my first foray into the National Football League is that there is no gray area with Coach Tomlin. I mean, you walk into the building each and every day, everybody knows what's expected of them. As he says, and it's true, the standard is the standard, and that just shows each and every season in Pittsburgh. He's doing a hell of a job this year. And I think I was on with Mitch and Pauly before the season, and I was like, I think Coach Tomlin could be a real player for Coach of the Year in the NFL, and it's looking that way. What he's been able to do, and then, of course, with the firing of Matt Canada, the first time since 1941, I think, the Steelers have made a coordinator or a head coaching change in the season. It's just remarkable, and the Steelers' schedule is very favorable heading into the home stretch of this season.
Drew,
just quickly, he's 12-1 them all, Coach of the Year. If he wins that division, I totally agree with Drew. Like, imagine. And Campbell is so short at +140. So, again, Tomlin, 12-1. Go ahead, Amal.
Yeah, just to build upon your point, Patrick, and Drew's point, I don't understand, guys. Help me understand why Dan Campbell is such a prohibitive favorite when this team was expected to potentially win the division. I don't know where you guys come out, but I thought this could be the year that Pittsburgh doesn't get to 500. They are mathematically two games from automatically being 500. 7-4, are you kidding me? How about the game they stole against the Ravens this year in Pittsburgh? This guy just wins. I mean, it's like he's got a sack of potatoes at quarterback, and it doesn't make a difference.
Look, they just find a way, and it's a lot like how Alabama always just finds a way, as they did a week ago in the Iron Bowl. And going to Coach Campbell, like, obviously he's done a great job, and I think that number probably plays into the public perception. I mean, if you watch an NFL pregame show, there's some sort of vignette on Coach Campbell, and they're getting all the public to love on him. So I would assume that that number's being brought down just by the volume of bets that have been placed on Dan Campbell.
Patrick, Drew just lost his invitation to the Georgia alumni game.
I think he did. Let's save the Georgia conversation. And of course, Drew played at Georgia. Oregon, Washington. I'll just ask you this way. Were you surprised when you saw the opener and now you have it doubles there at Circa, Oregon lane 10? Does that number surprise you?
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, that just feels like too big of a number, and it's one where, you know, you feel like something's up. You feel like they're just begging you to take the points, and sometimes you can see those spots from a mile away. But what Washington's been able to do, again, finding a way. I saw a comparison this past week to what TCU did a year ago on their way to making the national championship game. They were just finding ways to win games, and that does count for something. And you look at that Week 6 matchup when Dan Lanning admittedly left a ton of points on the field and Oregon ends up losing that game by 3 points. You would hope that he doesn't make those same coaching mistakes Friday night in Las Vegas. And Oregon is playing some amazing football right now. I saw in some look-ahead numbers that Georgia would be a one-point favorite against Oregon on a neutral site right now. So they're obviously, from a power ratings perspective, the closest matched to Georgia, who's the number one team in the nation. But 10's a lot, man. This is a conference championship game. It's not like Rome Odunze and Michael Penix Jr. just aren't going to be able to find success on the offensive side of the ball. So, look, as it keeps creeping up, I think there's more and more value on Washington for sure.
Yeah, I think you bring up a couple of great points there. First of all, Dan Lanning hasn't beaten Washington yet. Remember, he lost at home, and then this year you mentioned. And then the second point you made was great about their ineptitude in terms of efficiency in scoring opportunities. I'm going to leave the Georgia game for Patrick because he's got a strong opinion on that one. But, Drew, I want to ask you specifically, if I said to you right now, we've got 8 teams that are potentially viable for the football playoff, just based on eye test alone for you, forget schedules, records, whatever, who are the 4 teams you would take?
I'd take Georgia. I'd take Oregon. I like how Texas is playing right now. It's so unfortunate what happened with Jordan Travis and Florida State. You know, I think they're definitely on upset watch this weekend in the ACC championship game. But you saw Kirk Herbstreit. I mean, he was fired up last night on that college football playoff ranking show. And he essentially said if it's a close match Saturday in Atlanta, you would have a really hard time arguing that Alabama is not one of the top 4 teams in the country right now. That obviously is dependent on what happens in the Pac-12 championship game as well. But we could have absolute chaos on Sunday. I would have a hard time leaving Alabama out of that conversation for the top 4 if it is a closely contested game in Atlanta.
What do you do with Texas? They're going to, Oklahoma State 18. Oklahoma State just struggled against BYU at home, double overtime, as the boys said yesterday. It's a tough spot for Texas because they've got a great win, obviously, at Alabama, but they're a 15-point favorite here in the Big 12 championship game.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Gundy's always coached very well against Texas, and historically, as an underdog, he's in a great spot. Again, 15 points in a conference championship game, and crazy things do happen in Dallas or in Arlington, as they call it, in the Big 12 championship game. So again, like, why would you not take points with a team that has nothing to lose with a coach who's really good in a double-digit dog spot? So I think Texas ends up winning. Obviously, there's no look-ahead spot. They've got to win to have any chance of getting into the college football playoff. But you would think Oklahoma State kind of throws everything at the Longhorns. And I think certainly they can keep it within two touchdowns.
I want to ask you specifically about Kirby Smart. He spent 8 years as the DC at Alabama. No great defensive coordinator stays at any program that long. Is that what you think has helped, among other things, propel him to the success he's had at Georgia?
You know, one of the things a lot of people talk about around the Georgia program is not many people understand or give credit to just how smart Kirby Smart is. He is a very, very sharp guy. From what I understand, he's an avid reader. A lot of assistants of Nick Saban have tried to go be a head coach, and they haven't necessarily found a lot of success. I think that a lot of credit should be given to Kirby Smart for taking the things that he's learned from Nick Saban and then implementing them at the University of Georgia. It's not like he took over a bare cupboard. I'm not trying to say that whatsoever, but he got the administration to buy in. He got full buy-in from the boosters and the fan base, and he found the right spot for him. If you remember that season, that's when Steve Spurrier had resigned mid-year. This is 2015. Coach Richt was let go right after the end of the regular season at Georgia because Georgia knew it was their opportunity to go bring an alumni back to be the head coach, and that, of course, was Kirby Smart. So South Carolina was circling the waters, Patrick, to hire Kirby Smart that offseason, and Georgia made the decision, and it proved out to be timely and right for both parties of releasing Coach Richt and bringing Kirby Smart in, and it's crazy to think that was 8 years ago.
Why would you want Kirby Smart when you could get Will Muschamp? Are you insane?
Well, now they have them both. There you go.
Will Muschamp. Hey, you see the clock. A minute and a half. I want your take on Labby at Mississippi State, Jonathan Smith at Michigan State, and A&M Elko.
I like the hire with Jeff Labby, a guy who was at Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin, so he understands the state of Mississippi, obviously had tons of success at Oklahoma as well. That fan base enjoys a high-flying offense, so I think that's a great hire. We'll be interested to see what he does at the portal. Jonathan Smith, I don't blame him at all. I mean, with where Oregon State's at in the Pac-2 right now, it's the right time for him to make that jump and get into the Big Ten. And then Coach Elko, I love the stats about Jimbo Fisher's success with Elko as the defensive coordinator. And then without Elko, he certainly had something cooking there in College Station. Hopefully the expectations are reasonable for him.
Yep, 100%. They fell apart after Elko left. That's a great point. Just quickly, Dustin just sent me this. Duke's quarterback Riley Leonard, who's going to be a pro, has entered the NCAA transfer portal. We were talking about the quarterbacks jumping in the portal before Drew came on with us. And speaking of Drew, he's going to come back for another segment, including Atlanta. I wonder, will Drew be at the game on Saturday in Atlanta there? Of course, Georgia, Alabama. Right now, we're showing 5.5 with Georgia laying it and 53.5 on the total. We're coming back with Drew Butler next here. Sharp Money, it's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, bet $5, get $150 instantly in bonus bets when you sign up as a new customer. DraftKings promo code SHARP, S-H-A-R-P. It's that simple, $5 to get $150. And no sweat, same game parlay every day at DraftKings. The crown is yours. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, live downtown Las Vegas. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Of course, our buddy Drew Butler joining us here on Sharp Money, Championship Week, college football. We will, and again, you can find Drew on Twitter, at Drew Butler on Twitter, hear him 92.9 The Game in Atlanta. Will you be at the game coming up on Saturday?
Oh, yeah, I'll be there. And my wife went to Alabama, so we'll have some fun for sure.
Well, we need the story now. Well, I'm sorry. We need the story. So you went to Georgia, obviously. Your wife went to Bama. Tell us how this all happened.
She couldn't get into Georgia. That's how it happened.
I set you up for that one.
She went to Alabama. She was Journalism Student of the Year at Alabama, so shout out to her. But we grew up together, and she had a great run in Tuscaloosa. She worked up in New York City for a couple of years as well at NBC, and now we're back in Atlanta. So these weeks used to be me just assuming I was going to be a loser, but things have changed, so I'm pretty optimistic heading into this weekend.
Thank you. I think you should be. We were joking about, I'm sure you saw it, Drew, but the quote from Kirby where he was asked when his team, you know, were a little rusty, but they didn't start everybody against Georgia Tech. And somebody was like, do you think your team was looking ahead to Alabama or the SEC championship game? He's like, what are you talking about? We just won the state championship when they beat Georgia Tech. So it's like Kirby was dialed in. The line was great. Now, speaking of the line, 5.5. I feel like it's short. You tell me why I'm crazy or why you agree with me.
Yeah, we were playing it on 92.9. You were on with Andy Staples, and you love Georgia. You said the line is too short. And look, here's the thing, and I agree with you. The public loves to take points with Alabama. Even after they lost to Texas, I told everybody on my podcast, on the radio, Alabama's not going anywhere. Fully expect them to win the West. Fully expect them to be right in the conversation heading into the SEC championship, because that's what Nick Saban and these Alabama teams do. One of the things that I totally forgot about is that Jalen Milroe got benched this season. He did not start the South Florida game, which is a complete catastrophe for Alabama. But how they've been able to progress throughout the end of the season, I think that's where the number comes in, and it ends up a little short at around 5.5. Some notes on Alabama in Atlanta, undefeated in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, 8 straight SEC title wins in the SEC championship game, and they're 16-0 in Atlanta since 2008, with 12 of those 16 wins coming by double digits. So does that factor in when you're making up a number? I have no idea. But Coach Saban and the Crimson Tide, they'll be feeling pretty confident walking into this game. The last game Georgia has lost, guys, was the 2021 SEC championship in this very building, and Alabama smoked them 41-24, and it wasn't even that close.
Drew, when you look at the Georgia defense, not as dominant as the last couple of years, but what do you like about this team and the challenges they could present? And then how do they slow down Jalen when it's 3rd and 5, everybody's covered, now you've got a 6'2", 220-pound quarterback who's chiseled out of granite coming at you?
The number one thing I like about Georgia's defense the most is how they make in-game adjustments. You've seen it on this crazy run, I think 6 or 7 straight games where the opponent scores first, then Georgia just pretty much smushes them for the remainder of the game. Will that happen against Alabama? I mean, look, the stats would tell you they probably will score first. But what I've enjoyed seeing is how they respond, even coming out of halftime, to really make sure that they're correcting what's happening on the field. The biggest thing for Georgia's defense is they have to slow down Jalen Milroe. If they slow down Milroe, this game may not be close at all. But what's been vulnerable about Georgia all season long is their perimeter defense, right? When teams get on the edge and then stretch up the field. And the other thing that's really been a vulnerability for Georgia is athletic quarterbacks. It showed against Auburn as well when Peyton Thorne ripped off an 80-yard touchdown run. And obviously Jalen Milroe is going to be licking his chops. So how are they going to scheme up slowing down Jalen Milroe, who's been on an absolute tear over the last 8 weeks? I honestly have no idea. We're all going to find out at the same time, but it's no secret, guys. Georgia is going to do everything they can to keep Jalen Milroe in the pocket and make sure he doesn't get out, because when he does get out, everything else breaks down. He is such an elite athlete. He can get downfield so fast. I thought it was funny when Coach Smart in his weekly press conference likened him to a stronger, faster Lamar Jackson. I was like, wow, that's pretty high praise right there.
Amal, you love Jalen Milroe. He is.
Trust me, there's no bigger fan.
He is not even in the same ballpark as far as speed as Lamar Jackson. He's definitely stronger.
I think that's Coach Smart maybe playing into some of that rat poison for Nick Saban. But let me say one more thing, and I know it's tough, especially in college football, the transitive property, but they've had 4 common opponents all season long. Let's just go through them. They each played Ole Miss at home. Georgia beat Ole Miss by 35, Bama by 14. They each played Auburn away. Georgia won by 7, Bama won by 3. They played Kentucky. Georgia won by 38, Bama won by 28. Then they each played Tennessee. Georgia won by 28, Bama won by 14. So in four common opponents, Georgia had a much better win percentage or win separation than Alabama did. If that's worth anything, I just found that to be interesting.
I think that's a great point you make. Look, Patrick loves Georgia in this game, and it's hard to argue against him in this one. And for me, it's not about Saban. Maybe I'm comparing them too much to the last 2 years where they were so thoroughly dominant. I feel like I'm going to tell you, I learned this in a game in the mid-90s. You have to have a quarterback who's mobile in today's college athletics for the last 25 years. And that's where I feel like Milroe, where he's the difference maker. And, Drew, to your point about the South Florida game, I thought he put in Tyler Buchner and Simpson to tell everybody in Tuscaloosa, shut the hell up. Jalen Milroe is our quarterback because you know what I have behind me. So stop complaining about Jalen Milroe.
I honestly would not put that past Nick Saban, and it proved out to be exactly right, and it reignited Jalen Milroe heading into the second half of the season. One of the last things I'll say, and this could open up a whole new conversation, is I keep seeing everybody on Twitter saying, how is Washington the third-ranked team? They're a 9.5-point underdog this weekend. Do we forget that Texas was a touchdown underdog and beat Alabama on the road by 10 points? I just, for the life of me, I cannot understand that conversation when you're looking at the other side of which it negates it almost immediately.
I love the point Patrick he just made. I want to ask you one follow-up question. Patrick and I love Rome Odunze for Washington.
He's a stud.
We think he's right there with Marvin Harrison, and I went to school at Ohio State. But, Drew, don't you think, to your point you made earlier, Washington, where should they be this discounted? 10 points in a dome? No weather? Michael Penix is going to be sitting there throwing darts.
I could not agree more. I wonder what their understanding from Tosh Lupoi and Dan Lanning and this Oregon defense, who are fast and physical. Rome Odunze is one of the best wide receivers in all of college football. And not to discount Marvin Harrison Jr. at all. I mean, he's one of the best players in the nation. There are a handful of wide receivers who have put up some amazing numbers. But week in and week out, a guy like Rome Odunze is one who you could say is definitely a game breaker. So in that situation, inside in Vegas Friday night, look, they're undefeated. I mean, we could have a undefeated Pac-12 champion in Washington. Amal, you're talking me into it. I just think that's too many points to pass up.
Where are you on the Florida State conversation? Let's say they beat Louisville.
Yeah, you know, how, what's it look like? You know, do they win on a last second field goal? How does Tate Rodemaker look? I think the thing for Florida State fans, which they should feel confident in, is they can run the football and they've got a physical defense. The weather in Charlotte on Friday night is expected to be wet and cold. I know Jeff Brohm is a great coach at Louisville, and Jawar Jordan is a fantastic running back as well for the Cardinals. So I see that game as being really, really tight. It stinks, but I think Florida State, even if they win a close one, could be on the outside looking in. I don't think they should be on the outside looking in, but you're already starting to read the tea leaves of the committee, of the talking heads on ESPN, already trying to set up a scenario where they say the four best teams should get in, which you can't really disagree with, and they're trying to make the argument that without Jordan Travis, Florida State is not one of the four best teams right now.
Drew, at the end of the season, does Kirby and company accomplish what nobody's done since the mid-1930s Minnesota, or do you have somebody else winning it all?
You know, if they win on Saturday, I think it sets up extremely well for them. I think Texas would be a great matchup for Georgia, and I think Florida State would as well in the Sugar Bowl. And then you're facing off against a Michigan or an Oregon or Washington. Even if it's Michigan and Oregon, those are two teams that are set up very similar to Georgia, and it's just tough to out-Georgia Georgia. I know that sounds pretty weird, but it's what they've created. It's the depth that they have. It's the expectations and experience that they have in these spots. So get past Saturday and get into the playoff. I really like Georgia's chances of getting a three-peat.
Here's what I do know. It's going to be an awkward car ride home from the SEC championship game for the Butlers. No way to avoid it. One's going to be sitting there silently with like a little smirk on the face. The other one's definitely going to be silent. Enjoy it. Enjoy it, Drew. Thank you very much. Oh, by the way, Punt and Pass podcast with Drew and former quarterback Jake Fromm. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.